Radio Gorgeous.
So I am in the studio of Joanne Greenbaum in Tribeca, fabulous loft in Tribeca. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Joanne Greenbaum.
Thank you.
So the first thing I'm going to say, walking into your studio, is color. Just saturated, exuberant, joyous color.
I think in color. I don't have restrictions about color. Like, it doesn't... You know, some artists are like, I'm going to use these two colors, or I'm going to... But I don't have any restrictions, so I just feel like if the color is available, I'll just use whatever is out there in the marketplace. So, like, I think of color as a found object, almost. Mm. If it's out there, I will use it.
And for instance, because I'm seeing fluorescence. And people don't think, like, serious art can't be influenced.
Well, I think, you know, technology has improved in the last probably 10 years, where there were always fluorescent colors, but they would fade and they weren't archival. But I think now the paint technology has evolved so that all the companies are now making fluorescent paint for fine artists. And you can use it now without fear that it's going to fade. And also, the other thing is that I like about the fluorescent is that I always think that you should use what the new products are. Like, I like experimenting with new technology, even though my paintings are, you know, they're just paintings. They're not, I don't use the computer, let's say. But the fact that these new paints are out there, I use them. Also, I do like the contrast between, like, a fluorescent and a regular color. I think it gives, like, a nice sort of contrast.
And it's interesting because I've never thought, what you just said, like, paint technology. And it's always been a technical thing. It's like, where colors, they are found and made objects.
Right, they're made, they're manufactured. And like in the 70s, when all the color field painters, like Morris Lewis or Helen Frankenthaler, those paintings could only come about because of the new technology of acrylic paint. So, you know, that. So sometimes the technology makes the form.
So, and as an artist, are you also saying that you feel almost a responsibility as a living artist today to use what's in your living
world?
No,
I don't feel responsibility. I just enjoy, like, I think a lot of the way that my work evolves comes out of the use of materials. So, you know, by trying new materials, I get new ideas. But I don't feel a responsibility. I mean, sometimes I make something with just oil paint or totally without watercolor, which have been around for thousands of years. I don't feel a responsibility. The only thing I feel a responsibility for is to stay fresh and try to do something new, if that's possible in the two dimensions.
Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that you keep fresh,
right,
is the
right,
materials.
Right. And so, but as you see, I also make sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into your sculpture, because you have an upcoming show in London.
Mm-hmm.
And which gallery is it at?
It's Green Grossi.
And the dates?
I think something around March 10th.
Okay.
Probably for a month and a half or so.
Fantastic. And this show is mostly sculpture.
It's going to be, well, Cornelia Grossi in her gallery, Green Grossi, she has two spaces, a large space and a small space. And so I'm going to be in the small space, which is upstairs. So it's a very beautiful small room. And so I like the idea, since my last couple shows, I've only shown in London large paintings or painting exhibition. So I just thought it was time to show my sculptures there in the small room. So we had an idea to show a small group of sculptures with one of the paintings, with maybe one painting. So I've been making sculpture for about 11, 12 years. And with this exhibition, I'm going to be showing clay, ceramic, porcelain sculptures and some aluminum cast sculptures. And the porcelain sculptures that I make are hand colored. So I think of them, and one of the reasons why we're going to show them with the painting is because I think of the sculptures in a way less that they're sculptures, but that they're surfaces to be hand colored or painted on. And so for some reason, the high fire porcelain is just a very beautiful white color that I don't really glaze, that I just have it high fired. And then I take it back here to the studio. And then I think of it as another surface to be worked on.
They relate beautifully to the paintings because they're dense, your paintings are densely colored and very vivid, but they're also, there's a structure, there's geometric structures in there, and it's almost as if they're the 3D version.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Of that interior.
Well, when I started making sculpture, I just was in a place in my painting where I realized that the paintings were depicting fictional structures, and then one day it just occurred to me to try to make one, even though I had basically never made a sculpture in my life. And I was like working really tiny because I was embarrassed because I had just like, I've never made a sculpture before. So I kind of started almost with kids' materials, like the Sculpey Fimo, and, you know, kind of secretly making these three-dimensional things that were kind of like what were the paintings.
Shame art.
Yeah, it was secret.
Yeah, secretive.
And then I really liked it, and I felt like, okay, I kind of understand that why I'm making this. And then I enrolled in a clay class in New York, and also still, you know, never touched a piece of clay before, and just kind of very quietly, secretly started making small ceramic sculptures with, and, you know, really, I mean, even though I was taking a class, I pretty much self-taught myself just by seeing what the other people were doing. I was the only one pretty much making abstract sculpture. Most of the people were making vessels and things like, and functional objects. And,
do you think of traditional pottery?
Yeah, yeah. And I just decided, you know, I was just going to try to do this. And I just really liked it. And it kind of felt, in a way, less making sculpture. It felt more like three-dimensional drawing, in a way, that I would sit in a room with other artists or potters and, you know, not feel self-conscious. And I liked the group setting. And so I just kind of was just sitting there and making tabletop size sculptures for years and years. And it's only recently that I feel somewhat confident in showing them, because I think like any skill, I mean, it just took a while for me to figure out what I was doing and also how to use it in the best way for my work, which turned out to be sort of this hand coloring instead of using traditional glazes, which I'm not so interested in at this point.
My weekday fix? Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
I love it. The two things I love about that is that, one, sculpture is your, like, most people like drink in secret, but you were like sculpting in
secret.
Right,
right. No, I was, and I was embarrassed. Because I have a few friends that are sculptors or even ceramic sculptors. And I was like, oh, I can't possibly show them what I'm doing. You know, I just felt embarrassed by it.
Well, so now this show represents your sort of outing of
well, you know, I did have a the thing is, I did show them in Europe in a museum show that I had in Zurich, and then it traveled to Germany, and the curators there, I think, were a little bit more enlightened when they came to the studio and saw that there was this other activity going on. They said, "Let they got it. They understood that it's all a part of the same thing, and that I think in America, Americans tend to sort of compartmentalize things label a lot more and label. It's like, yeah. Well, you're just a painter. How dare you make sculpture?
Well, but also, you're an abstract painter,
right?
So, but then you realize you are a figurative painter, but it's the forms
right.
are
right. And also, and abstract. I think also yes, but also I think a lot of these sculptures come out of like a really long time ago. I started collecting vases, mm-hmm. and without really even knowing that what that would lead to, but I was very interested in like modern vases and odd shaped vases, and I would go to flea markets and eBay and just look for unusual things that sometimes were just handmade, and I have a whole collection of those. And but at the time I didn't realize that I wanted to really be making that myself, and so I don't disregard the fact that I may at some point want to make something functional.
Well, and also it's interesting because like you said earlier regarding color, that you don't have limitations, but it sounds like you had to give yourself permission to also say, I'm a sculptor.
Right. Well, I never would say that. Now no. People say, well, they say painter and sculptor now, which before I would never have said. But I also think the world has changed a little bit where people cross disciplines a lot. I mean, that's what artists do now, that there's, but I just think, you know, in the old and older days, it's like you had to just be one thing. Like now you can be a poet and a video artist. Mm-hmm. I think earlier it was like you had to choose your thing and then just sort of stick to it. So I think at this point, you know, I feel like I could just, you know, I draw, I make sculpture, I paint, and I also do other things. So, you know, I think that the world has just sort of, like, you just, it's just not as compartmentalized mm-hmm. as it used to be. So I feel a little freer, but I think also it's not even so much that, other than maturity as an artist and just feeling like your confidence that whatever you decide to do is just part of your artwork and that you don't really necessarily have to identify with that genre to try it out.
And talk to me about that confidence, and because you've always been an artist.
Oh yeah.
And yet you haven't always sold, and you sell very well now. You have a big name, and you know, and that's different from when you were younger.
Yeah.
And yet persevering and maturing in your work and gaining confidence and growing and branching out. Tell me a little bit about that evolution.
Well, I mean, I had that 15 to 20 years of no one paying attention. And even though that was painful in a certain sense, and it doesn't mean I wasn't trying to show or sell work, I think that that 15 to 20 years incubation period with nobody looking at you, nobody looking at what you're doing, is very, you develop. And I think that when I started showing my work in, I guess, the early 90s, it was a time that people weren't really looking at painting so much, and that I felt very free to try a whole new direction for myself because no one was really looking at what I was doing. So there was this feeling of not being self-conscious, because if no one's looking at what you're doing, it's like you just feel like, well, I can just do what I want because nobody's going to care. So I actually did start to develop my work in a certain way that was, I think, hopefully my own. And that you know, and even when I first started working, working like this and showing, I mean, I really wasn't getting a lot of attention. So, you know, there's a privacy there that I think is really important.
Okay, so how do you manage that now that you are, you know, less
It
private?
Doesn't, and it's not changed.
Okay, so it's a muscle that you developed over that time.
It's all developed. I don't make shows. I don't make paintings necessarily. Like, I'm not self-conscious at this point. Like, I just do what I'm going to do. If people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't.
Okay, so the biggest difference is you quit your day job.
Yes, I did quit my day job in 2001, which
that
I have
to
say.
Good.
That felt good. I still do the occasional teaching thing. But I think that it doesn't change. I mean, I think that I realize that I'm kind of still the same person I was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I just think that more opportunities that you get or attention that you get, it only boosters my confidence. And like, I'm not self-conscious about that. I think sometimes we talk, like a lot of people in the art world talk about, you know, that young artists become, a lot of them become stars very early, and what's going to happen to those people. And I think the difference is that, I mean, if there's always going to be people that start young and keep doing it, but I think that a lot of the people that are in the public eye from a very young age, if you don't have the tools to sustain that work habits, and it's not, or if you don't know how to work without attention, see, that's the difference. I think I know how to work without attention. So if
and
my business
quit.
Dries up, no, I never quit.
You never quit.
There's been a lot of disappointments.
A lot of people would have quit.
Sure. I never quit because this is just who I am. But I think that I think this is the experience part, is that you learn to just do your work no matter what. And that a lot of younger artists who get a lot of attention early on, they never develop that muscle to work with no attention, no money, that they have to go out and get a job and things like this. So,
like child actors or anything.
Right,
you
and
know,
some
anything,
of them do well, and some
founder
die.
Yeah,
you know. So, you know, I think for me, it's at this point, you know, it's just, I guess I just am grateful that I get to do this every day and play.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
Okay, so, and tell me what the relationship is. Okay, so you're this upcoming exhibition, you're having aluminum cast sculptures as well as ceramic sculptures, mm-hmm. with one painting. And what's that relationship with the painting
well,
and the sculpture?
I think at first I was just going to show the sculptures, no painting. And Cornelia Grassi suggested we put a painting in. And I think she, because she's smart, saw that there's a relationship between the two.
There definitely is.
And that it's, you know, that there is a dialogue and a conversation going on between the three-dimensional and the two-dimensional. So the paintings are actually, in a way, built like the way that I build the sculpture. There's kind of like each form kind of holds up the next form. Mm-hmm. And so before you know it, it's like you've built a painting. And the sculptures are kind of made the same way. You have to kind of build them in stages so they don't basically collapse. And the paintings are kind of just made the same way. And the aluminum ones, those are made first with sheets of wax. So you can cut the wax that's like into strips and sort of build with a heat gun with the wax and make your sculpture. And then I bring it in to be cast. And I was originally going to paint those, but when it came from the foundry in that aluminum color, I just thought, this is so nice, I'm not going to cover it up, which is different for me because usually I paint everything. And so I think that what happened was that I began to trust the structure just as much as the color that I'm putting on the structure. And so that's, in a way, the aluminum sculptures are very much about just the structure. And so I think that to show them all at once, like the painted ones and the aluminum ones, might be interesting.
Mm-hmm. It also sounds like to me that you have a love of just tactile objects.
Well,
and
I like materials. It's like sometimes when I'm bored, I just go to the art supply store and look around. And sometimes I go, look.
That's like your shoe department.
Right.
For me.
Yeah. It's like, out there. Like a lot of artists have their idea and then they illustrate the idea. I don't work like that. My ideas come from working. Mm-hmm. Or the painting is the idea. Mm-hmm. There's no separate idea. It is the idea. So I think like shopping for materials, it's almost like that's your raw materials.
The material is your partner.
Right.
Your partner in creativity.
Right. What can I do with this?
Yeah. What are its limitations and what are your limitations?
Right. I mean, it's like a chef with food. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really no different.
No.
Like these are the ingredients. I'm not one of these artists that's about the dematerialization of art. I like the human hand. I like the fact that my work looks like a person made it, not a machine. Doesn't mean I'm against that for other people, but I just think for myself, I mean, just because so much is like out there and been done already. And it's like when you come and the world is so messed up that like the only thing you can sometimes do is just make your own stuff by yourself.
Well, and also there used to be the school of action painting, but for
right.
you, it's not, you know, Tashism,
right.
But the act of painting.
Well, the act of working is
yeah.
that's it. That's
making,
the painting.
Making.
Or the sculptures are just a record of their own making. And that's what they're about.
What didn't I ask you, and what do you like to talk about?
The only thing that I think is an interesting topic these days is the word feminism,
mm-hmm.
and that...
And what role does that play
in
your art?
And that, you know, many, many, many good artists who are female are sort of being... It's like you don't get sexy for the art world unless you're really young or really old.
Mm-hmm.
And... I'm probably not old enough yet to be sort of sexy for the art world, and that there's a part of that that infuriates me, that when, you know, you have to be like in 70s, 80s, 90s for the art world to sort of finally give it to you in a certain sense. And so now there's all these shows and museums and galleries are all rediscovering or finding old ladies. And you know, on one hand, it's great for them and for the world, but that it is infuriating that nobody paid any attention.
For all those other
for
80
all those
years
80 and... years, 60 years, you know, and that it's somehow not acceptable unless you're extremely young and pretty, is because all 20-year-olds are beautiful,
mm-hmm.
Or they'll only take you when you're really old, with a lot of exceptions. But I'm just saying...
Generally.
Generally, I try to ignore most of it and just kind of...
Get on with the work.
Get on with the work and just feel like, you know...
I mean,
grateful for the fact that every day I can do that. You know, and I don't necessarily want to be part of the celebrity culture. I think if I had wanted to be part of that, I would have joined it. But it's not my personality or anything to sort of want to be part of that. I mean, I want to be known for my work. I don't want to be like a fabulous personality, because guess what? I'm not. You know?
You're fabulous enough.
But, you know, I don't want to be a fabulous personality.
Yeah. Yep.
And sometimes you see people and it's just like, God, that person turned into a clown because they're so desperate for
to
become a fabulous personality.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, that's
eye,
just not.
Keep in that love.
I like to just be quiet and do the work.
Mm. And it's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thanks.
We'll be right back.
RadioGorgeous.com.